For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a jam-packed Grip Lock. I'm your host, Hunter, joined as always by Trevor. Connor's out of the office today. We got so much to talk through.
There's a lot.
We're going to kick it off with a Patreon question of the week. World's just announced it's going to Europe. There is a huge off-season movement week with a bunch of people leaving, a bunch of people re-signing. There is an update, an unexpected update on the PDGA policy of, I forget what it's called, but basically gender divisions with Natalie Ryan. We have All-Star Weekend details were announced. The Ultra World Fandom Survey came out. All that stuff's ahead of you, but first, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor. All right, let's hop into this Patreon question of the week. If you're not sure where Patreon question of the week comes from, we have a weekly Patreon podcast called the Heiser Club Mailbag at patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. You can find all the information and more you want over there, plus a bunch of behind-the-scenes content, exclusive monthly videos, all kinds of fun stuff. You can find all that over there. So this one actually wasn't asked during the mailbag because it was submitted late, but I thought it was a pretty good question. So it came from Luke, and he said, in your guys' opinion, what disc has the most inaccurate flight numbers? Mm. Could even just be a plastic type that flies nothing like a number, say.
I mean, I picked up a Gateway disc once that had like a seven turn, positive seven turn. That was interesting.
Do you remember what the disc was?
No, I don't remember what it was. It had like a lot of glide, too. I want to say it had like double digits glide.
Daggone.
Yeah. Flight numbers can be anything you want them to be. I know what Hunter's gonna say, the felon, man.
The felon's up there because it doesn't have any negative, it doesn't have any turn, but then in actuality it has turn. I think the Raptor at times can go in that category too.
What is the Raptor though? Like, I don't even
9503? Yeah, it is a 03.
Yeah, the Raptor is I would argue the Raptor though, like
Raptor flight numbers.
Here's the thing,
9403.
The problem is, here's the problem, Hunter. The Firebird is also a 03.
The Felon is a positive 0.54. 9.3, positive 0.54.
Is the Firebird a 03 or a 04?
03.
Okay. So the problem is like...
But I've never had a Firebird flip up on me.
Right. No, I'm just saying like the Firebird's really overstable and they gave it a fade of 3.
9.3, 04. And sorry, I have this flipped. They gave it a fade of 4.
Okay, but even 4. Same point. We started off... Flight numbers are so weird because they weren't created on a 1-to-something scale. We don't really know. Like, everybody just adapted this idea of what flight numbers are. They need to be just redone, I think. Because you started out, the Firebird's an early disc, and they gave it a 4 fade. Why doesn't it have an 8 fade? Because now there's only 4. Basically, we operate on a scale of 1 to 4 on fade now.
There's discs that fade more than a Firebird.
Okay, but even maybe 1 to 5. You don't ever see a 6 fade.
I don't have a problem with the Felon or the Raptor having a 3 fade.
I just think
I have a problem with the 0 or the positive turn.
It would have been easier had we given ourselves a bigger scale to work on. Yeah. I think we'd get in a lot less arguments about flight numbers and like say they're so crazy if every single number was just 1 to 10. So everything could operate
the Felons
like the way it's supposed to.
Now, I know there's some like chameleon Felons and stuff that are very, very overstable.
And glide probably shouldn't even be a flight number.
But obviously, the Felons that I've thrown and that hurt me were like, I would have been okay with a 9.5-13. I would have said that's fair. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's when you have the 0 or the positive 0.5.
The positive turn is when I start to get really confused. And it's crazy too because like right now, you obviously speed goes anywhere from 1 to 14. Is there 15 speeds?
Surely somewhere. Probably. Maybe the Rampage or something.
And then you have glide you really only ever see between like 2 and 7. Like those are like pretty characteristic. It's weird. And like turn, you're never going to see more than a -5 or high, like, I don't even know what positive turn even means. That's not even like possible. So flight numbers
means it starts to fade earlier.
Yeah, flight numbers are weird. Like I don't know, because like, and they don't really do justice to like high speed versus low speed stability. Because like, certain discs. Yeah, I don't know. Most inaccurate flight numbers, though, the Raptor is a bit confusing. I would say some discs like are confusing because they start out a certain way. Like the Beast is a negative 2-2, but a brand new Champ Beast is going to fly pretty stable.
There's a lot of N of a ones that like...
But it's like as soon as you beat in a Beast, it's like then it reveals its turn, which is really weird.
There's a lot of animal because like this, you can get a Champ Sidewinder, Champ Roadrunner that like they also aren't nearly as flippy as you think they'd
be. Yeah.
So I'm gonna just say all discs have inaccurate flight numbers.
All
how about
of
that?
Them. Yeah.
One disc, you can have your pick of one disc has accurate flight numbers. Mm-hmm. Any disc in the world, you can pick that. But then the rest of them are inaccurate.
Yeah. None of them scale correctly.
Yeah.
I think it'd be funny to do.
And then I guess that one disc within certain runs is also inaccurate.
It'd be funny to write an article or like do a whole like news piece where like you study each company's flight numbers and try to like figure out their process and like talk to them and like get a grip on what each company's flight number system looks like and how it's operating. Because obviously everybody like if I'm at Dynamic Disc and I come out with a new disc, I'm not going to be like, let me go find a Firebird to figure out what flight numbers. No, you're going to grab another dynamic disc. So like everything is
relative. Well, I think
relative.
Some of it is just like you text the pros and say, hey, what do you think this flies like? This prototype we just sent you, what flight numbers
copy,
did you give it?
Paste. It's a little more stable than a Firebird. Oh, okay. Add plus one to this. Like, no, dude, you know what they need to start? We need to get attachments for our disc. Imagine if you had a ring that could overmold that snapped on and it gave you plus one fade.
There you go.
And then we can start giving flight numbers to the attachments. it's a modifier attachment.
You know what would be fun? This could be like an Instagram series where we like order or like over the course of a year, every restock we get of a certain mold, we keep like two from.
Yeah.
And then we like end of the year, take them all out. And like the whole premise would be like, we tested 25 destroyers to see how close they all fly to each other.
Right. Oh my gosh, it'd be hilarious.
And like throughout, because it's just like these were all manufactured, like these were all ordered this year. They're all the same plastic and they're all 174 grams.
Yeah, certain discs and certain companies would be like, they would all fly very similar. And then others, like a destroyer, would be like,
I think it'd be very interesting to see.
What would be the most inconsistent disc that we would have? I think the Nuke would be up there.
I think the faster,
the more that like I think dome plays into it, because like a mid and a putter, it's just not going to get that.
No,
crazy.
I think the
it's distance drivers,
fast rims that have a little bit of turn.
Yeah, that's
so
what I'm saying.
Any like if it gets to, like too flippy, then it's going to be consistently flippy.
Right,
it's like ones that have a little turn and fade. So like
a crank,
the destroyer,
cranks would
the
be
crank,
all over the place.
Trespass. I've even had some trespasses burn me. Enforcers.
Yeah,
like any of that stuff. D1s.
Oh, gosh. Don't even get me started on Prodigy, man.
it turns out that one was a D4, I think. I think they stamped a D1.
The D1. Although I will say the last
the new ones
they
feel
sent
good.
Me were...
The new
were,
ones feel
yeah,
good.
The last ones they sent me were all... They all flew accurately.
I'm speaking from pain of 2017, yeah. Hunter, trying to find a D1
We've
that's overstable.
We've been through a lot. What happened to my TMZ hat?
I don't know. Mine's right here. Oh, they're both right here.
Thank goodness, dude. That was close.
I don't think we need it for this episode.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so.
We got all facts.
All right, let's get over into... A big announcement in the disc golf world, the 2025 PGA Majors.
Whose question was that, by the way?
Luke.
What up, Luke?
The 2025 PGA Majors have been announced, and the big thing here is the PGA World Championships is headed to Europe, to Finland specifically. So Pro World is headed to Europe. 2025 PGA Pro World Championships will be held in Nokia in Tampere. I think that's how you pronounce it. Tampere, something like that.
Very
Finland.
Good.
So the longtime European Open director, Jussi Maresma, is working with the cities of Nokia and Tampere in Finland, along with the Finnish Disc Golf Association, to bring for the first time PGA Pro World to Europe. The event is sure to be a memorable experience for athletes and fans alike. The proposed courses are the Beast.
Memorable for like half the athletes.
That's funny. The Beast, which is the one used for the European Open, and the Tampere Disc Golf Center in Tampere. These two courses will provide a fantastic stage for what should be an exciting 2025 Worlds.
So we're looking at a triple major now this year, that year? No fourth major?
No, there is a fourth major. So down here, where is the explanation? So additionally, with the Pro Worlds being played at the Beast in Tampere in 2025, the European Open will not be hosted the same year. Instead, the traditional European PGA Major will take place in Tallinn, Estonia. at the Tallinn Song Festival grounds, which that's the host right now of the European Championship in 2023.
I just hate when like...
So they're moving the European Open.
I'm fine with that.
Now, Brody got very like read every word as literal. So in Brody's head, the European Open will not exist. And Brody thinks they're calling this the European PDGA Major. How I read it is basically the European Open won't be hosted.
It wasn't the last sentence that they will be moving the European Open.
No, so instead the traditional European PDGA Major will take place in Tallinn, Estonia. So how I read it is like the European Open's not going to happen. They're just going to have a different major in Europe.
Yeah, they should just call it the European Open and then they should just always rotate the European Open.
Well, so right now it's the host of this grounds is the host of the European Championships. Right. I would imagine that's just what they call it. They just make the European Championships a major.
Yeah, but
Brody was very funny because a lot of his hot take was he was like the traditional European PDGA Major is just an awful name, and I was like, I don't think that's what they're going with.
Well, they did call an event the Florida Open for a little.
Nope, chess.com now,
well,
man.
For a little bit, they thought about it.
They did think about it.
Here's the thing, I hate first of all, gosh, I hate this whole like insert new major thing like. Now we're going to have to be like, oh, yeah, European Championships was a major that year. It's like how we have to think about that Eagle McMahon one. Which one was that?
Kona Piché.
Be like, oh, yeah, Kona Piché was a major that year. Like, I hate that.
Yeah, it sucks.
I wish they would just and they might still, but just like.
Just make it the,
just
European,
make it the
open.
European Open.
It's still in Europe.
It's still in Europe.
Works.
It's still kind of an open. Not really. Like, yeah, just do that. You better tread carefully on this subject, though, because, you know, you're in some hot water. People are calling you anti-Europe.
Yeah, let me just read. I'll just read my tweet.
You are calling you anti-Finland.
And then people got very upset over this,
pretty funny because I think it's a pretty obvious like knee-jerk take.
Pretty funny.
That like makes a lot of sense to me.
So this was my initial take here, and I'm going to just read you exactly what my tweet said. Okay? So I'm not going to add any context to it.
Yeah.
Because I think my tweet said everything.
I'll be the consumer.
It says, so this, I just quote tweeted where the PDGA announced that the world is going to Europe. I said, what are your thoughts on this? Obviously makes sense to eventually have Worlds be a global thing, but currently when an event goes to Europe, the strength of field goes way down due to lack of U.S. talent being able to travel. Is that something we want for our world title? That was it. That was the tweet.
I think that seems like a reasonable question to pose to the people. Everybody reacted like pretty calm to that, right? And like they were like,
now,
yeah, Hunter, that's an interesting question.
Well, the question I have for you, Trevor, is when you heard me say our world title, did you take it that I meant the U.S.'s world title?
I thought you meant like ours is, and you're talking about me and you. Like, it's our world title.
See, like, because when I wrote that tweet, the whole tweet's about the disc golf world title.
Yeah.
So I meant like our as a sport world title. Do we want the world championship? This is basically the question I was trying to ask is, do we want the world championship, the event that has the title, is the biggest prestige, should be the hardest thing to win in the world?
For the sport of disc golf.
For the sport of disc golf. Do we want that title to go to Europe this early in the sport when historically that means that as of this year, the European Open was basically a bottom of the chain Pro Tour event field strength
wise. You don't have to explain yourself to me. I think it makes total sense.
I'm more
sense.
Explaining it
yeah,
to the audience
listen,
now.
It makes the qualm here, this will be a, we know it'll be a fantastically run tournament, probably better
it'll
than
probably be one
a
of
lot
the
of the world.
Well attended world
it'll
championships
be really
ever.
Well attended. It'll be a success in that right. But the only point here is like, the European Open field is weak, especially the FPO field. Like,
oh, the FPO field. Like I didn't even mention the FPO field.
Like, sad weak. Like, there's barely anybody there. And
now,
if the point of the world title, if not only that, but now if we have two majors in the season that have fields that are really weak, and it's because players can't afford to get over to Europe, then, like, that to me is not good. Like, we want to see, like, that just seems so. That would seem so bizarre to me that we have half of the majors in 2025, and this is obviously still a year, 2 years away. So you know, maybe things change. More players are able to get over. Maybe you know, maybe the PDGA charters a jet. They're good guys. They'd do that. but that's the only question. I know we have a lot of listeners from Finland and elsewhere across the pond. And I, like I said, I'm not coming after the tournament or anything like that. I'm happy for you. Happy for you, but I'm a little nervous about the strength of field. And Hunter, give him a stat. Come on.
Okay.
Give it
so
to
him. For MPO, the World Championships 2023 was the number one strength of field at 96.8.
What's second place?
Second place was USDGC at 81.3.
That is monumental. It was the highest strength of field by a significant margin over USDGC.
And then European Open's 15th below pretty much the entire Pro Tour. The only two main, only there's three main Pro Tour events below it. The Portland Open, DDO, and OTB Open. And then obviously the Pro Tour Championship, but that's an invite only, so we kind of, you can exclude that. Right. Those are the only main Pro Tour events below it because the rest are silvers, mm-hmm. At 64.8 points. Yeah. Now, how Satmando conducts the points, you know, who knows? How does anyone
But it's
in
a bottom tier Pro Tour strength
of field. It's a bottom tier Pro Tour strength of field. The closest major to it is Champions Cup at 68. But Champions Cup also wasn't super well attended because if you remember that whole, what you call registration debacle when like a bunch of people couldn't register.
I was like, yeah, what happened there? Yeah. Oh, yeah, people didn't register.
Now, on FPO side, it looks a little
just
different.
Just a reminder to all you pros, make sure to register for Champions Cup next
year. On FPO side, it looks a little different. So you had the U.S. Women's was the highest major in third place at 45.3. PDGA Worlds was right below it at 45.08. So basically, they were tied, those two majors. The strongest was the MVP Open at 50 points.
Interesting.
And then Throw Pink Women's was also higher. Hmm. I think there's something there. And then if you jump down, European Open is 23rd on FPO's list at 23.6. So what that is basically exactly half the strength of field of Worlds here.
Yeah.
So that's my qualm with it, is Worlds being a global thing. I mean, it's been in Canada before. Worlds being a global thing, all about it. It makes sense. We're titling something the World Championships. I'm all for that. But my question is it too soon? We're going to have half the majors are going to be in Europe, and they're both going to be close together, a different problem I have.
Here's
And so is it my? That was my whole question is like, is that too soon? Because historically, whenever a major has gone to Europe, whenever anything's gone to Europe, sure, the main top guys travel, absolutely. But you miss a chunk of the field and you replace them with players that statistically, not opinion, statistically, are not as high quality players. That's just stats.
Let's think about it this. The good news is obviously that most of the players that could win will be there. But I don't think Gannon went to Europe last year. Dickerson a lot of times isn't there. Like, it'd be interesting to see some of those guys who haven't gone.
Yeah,
the
argument that was coming after me was Worlds will take more people over there, which I agree with.
Yeah,
surely Gannon's not going to miss Worlds, but a player who's willing to miss a major, are they also willing to miss Worlds?
All we have right now is precedent, right? Like, this is all we're going off of. Maybe everybody finds maybe there's bake sales nationwide and people find a way to pay for their tickets, and that's that. GoFundMe's whatever. And that's great and all. It's just, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, sometimes Worlds does generate a winner that, like, you know, a Greg Barsby or a James Conrad that were a little further down the totem pole. So, like, yeah, you'd hate to see a guy who was maybe a fringe player that didn't go, and that was maybe going to be his weekend. You never know.
Yeah. I mean, we just saw Corey Ellis win the European Open this year.
Oh, no, you never
and that's a player who,
I
like...
I will say this. If Paul McBeth can get healthy, he's going to have back-to-back Worlds at courses he likes.
Yeah, that is very true. But like Corey Ellis, that's a player who won the European Open this year that name-wise, it wouldn't have surprised you if he didn't travel to the European Open this year. Like, it wouldn't have been a shock if Corey Ellis wasn't on the list of players that went to the European Open.
He's there, he won.
And he just won at the courses 2025 Worlds will be. So like, it's not unheard of for a player a little bit. Now, Corey Ellis, you know, he put himself in contention multiple times, but he's not like a Calvin Heimberg, Ricky Wysocki, Eagle McMahon type guy.
Yeah.
So
personally,
that's that.
I think the PDGA should charter a plane.
Here's what I think.
I think we should all call for them. Everybody, let's. I think if just a few dollars of our PDGA membership, you know, went towards a big jumbo jet, then we can get our guys over there.
Here's
and gals.
What my opinion is I think that a lot of people at the PDGA would agree with everything I just said, but I think their hands were tied because it wouldn't surprise me if this was the only Worlds bid they got.
Knowing what we know about Worlds bids in the past and the lack thereof, I mean, a lot of people were like, how did Nate Heinold get Worlds to New London and getting all these? Listen, guys, there wasn't much to pick from.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a very real chance. Like, there's all I'll say is there's a very real chance that this Europe was the only bid. There's a very real chance.
Yeah, or the only credible bid.
Yeah, or like the other bid was us, you know, because we bid every year, but we just never get it.
Yeah.
Peaksview Park, they just don't want it for some reason.
So that's my opinion. I think the event will be very well spectated. I think it'll be ran better than most majors. I think that the players who are there will have a fantastic experience. I think it's all around is going to be an incredible event. My only question was, is it too soon based on the stats we have of strength of field?
Maybe Brody can put us in his overhead luggage.
That's my name.
And we can get out.
No, I think, I mean, I would love to go. I also, the other thing that worries me is
UC
having the majors not spread out. I don't like when two majors are really close. And
oh, yeah. Wait a second.
They're trying to make both the European ones close together.
They're gonna stay over in Europe, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I didn't even.
So I would imagine it'll be.
Yeah, because surely we can't be asking the players to go take two.
They'll probably be within a month of each other.
Oh, gosh.
But what that also will mean is the U.S. tour during that month span is just going to be. If there's any full pro tour scheduled during that month, it's going to be the weakest pro tour field of all time.
We're the Pro Tour Europe now.
Yeah, they'll just be showing up.
It's the European Pro Tour.
Yeah, and then on top of all of that, too, currently I believe it's like 70-some percent of DGN subscribers, which covers live disc golf, is U.S.-based. So that's the other thing you have to think of, too, is like sponsorship activations are worth way less if you're dealing with 30% of the audience. FPO, the 30% of 6,000 people watching live is not a lot.
Morning.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
So that's my opinions on it.
Not anti-Europe.
Not anti-Europe by any means.
We
I think it's just a little too soon.
Finland, guys.
I think it's a little too soon. I'm also, European Open's my favorite event that happens every year.
Yeah, Hunter actually uses a Nokia phone. Like, he's a big Finland guy. Yeah.
It's a brick. Big off-season movement week. I think I have them all listed, but.
Okay. I haven't heard of all of these, so.
We'll see. So some of them I just added this morning because I just saw them. Okay. First off, Ben Callaway has re-signed with Discraft for the upcoming season. In his post, it seemed like he kind of wanted to shop himself around a little bit, but landed back at Discraft.
I think there's a lot of players this year, from what the chatter I'm hearing, is like a lot of players like, yeah, I'll shop around. And then they walk. It's like you walk into a grocery store right as they have announced a winter storm's coming, and there's no bread, there's no milk. It looks like an apocalypse. That's the free agency market. And then they ran straight back to their manufacturer.
Yeah, because the way he worded it was like he was signing with the tour team again, and he said he like put a lot of time, energy, thought, consideration into this, something along those lines, and decided to, because the tough part is like Ben Callaway was a guy who a few years ago was on the elite team.
He was like on the up and up.
He's gotten the tour series discs. He's seen that type of revenue
before.
He's
on Team Ledgestone though.
And it's the tour team versus elite series revenue, I think, looks a lot different.
Yeah.
Then Eric Ostenchkom re-signed with Thought Space and Infinite. Andrew Fish re-signed with Discraft. Robert Burridge back with Lone Star. Now, Lone's I had a source. So apparently, I don't think I was fully wrong.
Oh, okay. We got an update on the story.
Well, because I was, if you remember, I said I thought he was leaving and all of that, and then he ended up not leaving. I was like, man, I must have just like made it up in my head, is what I thought. But then someone said,
not you.
The rumor is that Lone Star, like, he basically was leaving Lone Star.
Yeah.
But I think kind of what you had said.
Yeah.
He ended up accepting a smaller contract to stay at
Lone
Star.
There's a lot of guys that went out there like, oh.
So I think I had heard during that middle part of like, oh, he's gone. And then he was like, ah.
I'm scared for Chandler Kramer.
I'm back.
Scared for him. Is he on your list?
No, I haven't heard yet.
We're gonna have to sign him.
But he, I
his
haven't
hair
heard
has
yet.
To change to our colors, though.
There we go. We got to have half black, half gold here.
Yeah.
Chris Clemens has announced he's leaving DD. That was obviously after we had the TMZ hats on last week talking about his RV was at Discraft.
Yep.
So assuming that's where he's going, Chandler Fry has made the decision to leave Discraft. So he's gone from Discraft.
Only
and
enough
then,
room for one C-named guy.
Tristan Tanner has left Latitude 64. So that's all that happened last week. A lot of people left, a lot of question marks. We should have all of that stuff start to be answered in January.
Tristan Tanner's like the king of leading a major after one round. Best player to ever do it. Like, you will look at that leaderboard and see Tristan Tanner's name, and then you'll watch him on cover and be like, this guy's going to, he should win everything, and then the next round will fall apart. That's Tristan Tanner for me.
That makes sense.
He's got a sick logo, though.
Well, it's also his haircut, like his new look out there.
He's a good-looking guy.
It was intimidating this year.
Let's go, Tristan.
Because he used to have, like, curly hair, right?
I think so.
And then out of nowhere, he just went with
the
fade.
He left Latitude probably to go to, like, Cast. They're probably just spreading around their assets at this point.
I don't know. I've heard that House of Discs doesn't want to move people internally.
Okay.
I've heard that.
Interesting.
We'll find out this offseason if that what I heard is true or not.
Yeah. If we see a single internal move.
Yeah, then obviously that's not true.
It.
But it'll be interesting to see what all happens. And then obviously the Eagle McMahon rumor has picked up more and more steam, but it seems like a lot of people are really leaning into he's going to Innova, which will be very interesting to see.
I absolutely love it. Everybody to Innova, baby. That, bring back the dream teams of the early 2000s.
It'll be very interesting to see if he ends up at Innova. Six the other rumor that is picking up steam is that Gannon Burr staying at Prodigy. And why this rumor is picking up steam is because he's still bidding on rare Prodigy discs on Facebook. So he's still bidding and buying. Now, he could just be a diehard Prodigy collector.
I'm going to say, yeah, okay. So when Alden joined the Discmania Collectors, that pretty much, in my mind, locked him in there. If Gannon, as of right now, is, and I was very adamant about him leaving because I think it's still very silly that he would be staying after they sued him. But in any case, the free agency market's a wild thing right now. It's a ghost town. If he's still bidding right now, like as of
this
when,
was like as of like a week or two ago.
If yeah,
this is a few like a exactly. week or two ago.
So if that's still happening, Prodigy's a lock. I'd say it right now. It's a lock.
Yeah,
there's just no way you're doing that at this point. It's almost January. You'd have at least an inkling that you're leaving. I mean, this man is—he's staying at Prodigy.
Yeah, that's what the new rumor is. So
yeah,
we'll see. I think January is going to answer a lot of questions. Obviously, January will answer a lot of questions. So I'm very excited.
January might not answer all our questions, man.
It might not.
Might be another Ezra Ayerhold situation where it's like we're waiting forever.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Was it when was it? It was last year. Yes, it's the Gannon thing last year where he was carrying the random, like, unbranded bag at All-Star Weekend.
At All-Star, yeah.
We need that again this year. I want like, a really good player to just go free agent for, like, the first 2 weeks of the season, like, win twice, and then sign. Just absolutely prove it out there.
That's funny. Yeah. All right, well, that's the off-season movement week. Like I said, not a lot of official, like, done deals, but a lot of questions have started to be open about what's happening in January.
Discraft own the Chanimal brand?
Who knows? We'll find out.
These are things you got to think about.
Next week, we internally, Foundation, mainly Griplocked, will also have a special announcement during next week's episode. It'll be another Tuesday episode, you know, January 2nd. But
yes,
you're going to stay attention. Tuned for that. All right, but it's time for a fan favorite segment, Trevor's Trivia. Trivia with Trevor.
All right.
What do you got?
So I've got a fun little quiz here, and it is, we're going to see if we can, hold on a second. I lost it for a second.
Oh no.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
How many Trevor's Trivias have we done?
How many episodes have we done? We haven't done all.
210 or something.
Okay. Here we go. Okay. So I have a list here of all the countries that have a disc golf course. And your goal is going to be to, I guess I usually plan these with an opponent in mind. I guess it's me, you versus the course today.
Heck yeah.
Your goal is to find the lowest population possible that has a disc golf course.
Lowest population that has a disc golf course?
And you're going to pick a few and you're trying to stay under. And let's say you're trying to stay under, what's the USA population right now? USA population right now is 331.9 million.
So I'm trying to stay under that.
So you're going
to
try and pick 10 countries that have a disc golf course and stay under 331.9 million.
Okay, 10.
Yeah.
Okay, well, first off, I'm going to go with Antarctica.
Antarctica is not a country, I don't think. They're a continent. Is Antarctica a country?
I don't know, but like they're a continent. Let's I know they have in. A disc golf course.
Let's enter it in. We have the quiz here. I just know that, imagine the Antarctica population is just massive. Oh, do you actually like click on it?
Oh, so this is going to be a geography thing for Trevor. Good luck.
Oh, this is disastrous. Surely I can just like, hold on a second. Can I just see all the answers? Oh, this one doesn't have the number or the, oh no, this works. This works just fine. Okay. I don't think they're listing.
That's just criminal.
Antarctica. Okay. We need to Google this.
Is Antarctica a country?
They have disc golf courses. Is Antarctica.
It must just be a continent.
A country. Who owns the territory? Antarctica is a unique continent in that it does not have native human population. There are no countries in Antarctica.
So can we just go claim it?
It's governed by about 30 countries.
No. Oh.
It's not a country, so you can't have Antarctica.
Dang it. Okay, well, that was my only one I knew was going to be good. Okay. So that sucks.
This is fun.
Wow. Okay. Gosh, I have no idea. I have no
idea. You're going to have to throw it out there to get yourself a scale.
Let's just go with Zambia.
Okay.
I know Zambia. There's a disc golf course there, but there's a lot of people in Zambia.
Let's see what the Zambia population is.
That was a dumb one.
Zambia population. Is it like
there's a
crazy
lot of people.
Condensed?
I mean, it's not like crazy condensed.
Only 19 million.
Yeah, but that's half of my stuff.
You have 330 million.
Okay. So I can average 30 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a good start.
But I need to figure out where disc golf courses are. That's the hard part, is I think of like certain countries
and
then I don't
think
it's disc golf
courses.
Countries
are like, even though, I don't know, population density is always tough to know.
I need to stay away from India.
Yeah, well, there's not really courses over that way.
It's good. I can't really think of anything else. Let's go with, surely there's, but Brazil would be so populated. Gosh, this is impossible. This is impossible.
No, it's not. There's so many countries.
Yeah, I don't know many countries. You gave me a geography one.
No, but like think about, okay, like Europe, for example. There's a ton.
That's
like
fair.
Almost every country in Europe has a disc
golf. Okay, let's just go with Finland.
Okay.
Finland's probably a population of like 15 million.
Let's see. Finland population. 5.5 million.
Oh, this is great. Okay. We're going to ride this wave. The only problem is I'm going to lose the... Like, Sweden's a country.
Sweden's a country.
Let's go Sweden.
Okay. Sweden has disc golf.
We're just going to ride this
population,
wave.
Stay in Scandinavia. 10 million.
Yeah, this is great. This is great. Okay. Let's just stay over that way and find another country, huh? I've done Finland and Sweden so far.
Yeah.
Estonia. Is that in Finland? No.
Estonia is not in Finland. It's its own country.
Yeah. Give me that.
Okay. Estonia population is only 1.3 million.
Yeah, this is great. Okay, I'm killing it right now.
You're doing great.
Okay, let's just stay
over
there.
You're just going to have to avoid an absolute bomb. That's the
kicker. I feel like if I stay in Europe, I'm probably golden.
Some of them just might be really dense.
Yeah, well, I'm going to try to just avoid the big ones.
Like, and tourism like drives people to some of these countries. Like, I don't know.
Well, tourism
they won't
shouldn't
count
affect
as
the population.
A population. I'm just saying they might drive more people to live there. I don't know.
Finland, Estonia, Sweden. Let's go Norway.
That's the one, the other one you needed. Okay, Norway population is 5.4 million. You're killing it so far.
How many countries do I have? Is that five? I'm halfway there.
Yeah, you're halfway there and you are under. You just have to avoid a disaster.
Give me Greenland.
Is there a disc golf course in Greenland?
I don't know. Right now, I'm just trying to think of countries.
No disc
There's no
golf.
Disc golf in Greenland.
No.
What are we doing as a sport? I'm scared of Iceland because Iceland's the actual Greenland, if that makes sense. You know.
Iceland.
But I feel like that can be really densely populated areas. You know, let's just do it. I've never met someone from Iceland.
Iceland does apparently have a disc golf course.
Let's go Iceland. I've never met someone from Iceland, which makes me think it can't be that populated.
That's a good one.
That's how I'm doing
Iceland.
This.
Population. Oh my gosh.
They're massive.
370,000.
Wow. That might be the best answer.
You're really finding your groove now.
Okay. I thought this was going to be impossible.
No. You're making this easy. I thought this was going to be way harder too. There's so many people in the United States. So I should have gave you 100 million.
Let's go with I just can't blow myself
up. You're going to start running out of like the easy ones though.
You know, but I think we're okay.
Yeah, just start sending it at this point. I mean, you're so far under. Like, you can't. I mean, at this point.
Ireland.
At this point, you should surely name, like, big countries and not run into a
problem. I'm not going to try that.
Ireland population is 5 million.
Okay, I like that.
So easy.
Is the United Kingdom or Great Britain a country? United Kingdom is.
Mm-hmm. It would be the United Kingdom.
Yeah. Give me that.
He wants the United
Kingdom. I want the United Kingdom.
That's interesting.
I got enough population to deal with here.
Okay, this could be this could either be way more or way less than I think it is. Okay, it's pretty big. 67 million.
Yeah, I got enough to mess with that.
Yeah, oh, for sure you do.
Okay.
Yeah, you're still under 100 million total, and you have 330
million.
Give
me Israel.
Do they have a disc golf
course? Yeah, I know they do, because someone messaged us about it.
Might not be listed on here. We may have to fact check that. I'm pretty sure I know where Israel is.
I can just search
it. Yeah.
I'm pretty positive someone.
Does it exist on UDisc?
Your guide to disc golf in Israel. 60th best disc golf country, has two courses. That's from UDisc.
Okay. Fair enough. Israel population. 10 mil.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. How many more countries do
I
have to do?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. One more. You can literally name any country probably in, other than like a disastrous one.
One more. Ukraine.
The Ukraine.
Because that was another, someone else messed just about a disc golf course in Ukraine.
There you go. That's going to be easy. Ukraine population, 43 million.
I did it.
Easily.
I thought I wasn't going to be. I didn't.
You used like half your total.
But what was scary was I didn't think I was going to be able to name 10 countries.
I was just waiting for you to slip up and drop in, like, I don't know, like, what's the population of, like, a Germany, for example? Like, is there's got to be some that are big. I mean, even that's only 83 million.
Russia is pretty not densely populated. Like, Russia's massive, but
their population is 140 million. Yeah. I'm starting to think the U.S. is just, like, oh, it's too
U.S. is very, well, what's China's population?
China population? 1.4 billion.
Yeah, exactly.
So you probably should have named that one.
No, that's what I'm saying, away from China. The U.S.
There's
is
some sleepers out there.
U.S. is densely populated, but there's like India's population is probably.
We're only densely populated
in certain areas. That's
too.
The key.
We drove over.
Yeah, India's also 1.4 billion.
You hear people talk about the, like, you know, the whole country could fit in Los Angeles, and you're like, what? And then you drive across the West Coast and you realize just how much space exists in this country. Yeah.
Yeah, so you have India, China, both at 1.4 billion, and then the U.S. at 340 million. And then, like, Indonesia, Pakistan, Nigeria, Brazil.
Oh,
I'm glad
Brazil,
I didn't name Brazil.
I almost named Brazil. Oh, that's what
I
mean.
And I was like, no, Brazil is probably densely populated. That's 216 million.
See, there are some sleepers in there. Okay, there was definitely, you just didn't run into
anything. Yeah, I just stayed away from them. I did good. Okay.
That was impressive.
All right.
You ran to Scandinavia.
So, on this past weekend, news broke. This is from Ulti World. In Natalie Ryan's settlement, the PDGA drops pre-puberty transition rule for transgender women, so Ryan will be eligible to play at all 2024 and 2025 events. The PDGA and the DGPT were incurring significant legal expenses fighting these lawsuits. So they basically dropped their rule. It was the part three of their rule. So the rule basically has reverted back to what it used to be, more or less. This rule change goes into effect January 2024 and will be in place through at least the end of the 2025 season. Immediately makes Natalie Ryan and other transgender women who have gone through at least 2 years of hormone therapy eligible to compete in FPO at all PDGA events. The PDGA's decision to drop the controversial clause in the gender eligibility rules comes as part of a settlement with Ryan, who agreed to drop all pending lawsuits against the organization in California and Minnesota. Other terms of the settlement have not been made public. And I don't know if they'll ever will be made public. So Ryan has already signed up for a 2024 tour card and intends to play at most DGPT and major events. The quote in here says, I'm excited to announce that the PDGA, DGPT, and I have reached an agreement. All trans women will be equals at the elite level again. This is my victory. I had to be ruthless to get them to listen. I'm glad I can put that side of myself away. Now I'm hopeful that our sport can start fresh and grow to be a place that truly welcomes and celebrates everyone.
But you put the ruthless side away now.
Yeah.
She won't tell people to burn with them or whatever.
Yeah, I don't remember what that statement was. The PDGA wrote in their statement, the PDGA is not financially or logistically in a position to take the lead in a multi-state litigation on this topic, wrote the PDGA. For the first time in recent memory, the PDGA will end the year with a net operating loss, and it is not in the best interest of our members to continue to allocate resources to farther litigation.
I love how they include us in there, the members, like as if we have anything to do with what the PDGA does. It's not in the best interest of the members. We took a vote.
And then the Pro Tour said, while the DGPT did not wish to see adjustments to the policy at this time, the Tour recognizes the PDGA as the regulatory authority and governing body of the sport empowered to set these policies. It's become clear the sport of disc golf cannot bear the weight of adjudicating this issue on a national or international level at this time. So both the PDGA and the DGPT said they'll continue to evaluate local, state, and federal laws as well as International Olympic Committee guidance on the issues they plan for competition rules in 2026 and beyond. So all the language of this UltiWorld article and from what you'll see on the PDGA's website, seem that 2024 and 2025, part of the settlement locked. Mm-hmm. Like there's not going to be a change over this season or next season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they're looking into 2026. It definitely, if you read the PDGA statement,
it's pretty obvious on both of them that it's just like, yeah, this isn't what we wanted to do, but we can't do it because we don't have enough money.
Yeah, the PDGA statement, I'm trying to see exactly like how they, yeah, the way they put it is just they're not financially or logistically in a position to take the lead and that they're going to operate at a loss for the first time.
And this is what the Pro Tour had expressed to me. I had heard, you know, like this is a really huge like legal dispute across the country, across multiple sports right now. And like disc golf just is not the one that can bear the weight. There's not enough resources. It does stink, like in the sense that I don't like that this is what it's come to. Like I would have rather there just been like an actual legal decision made. I don't like the idea that it's just like, well, we ran out of money, so now we have to settle. Like that's just kind of unfortunately a little bit of a bummer in the legal system is like, if you don't have the, like the people with the resources ultimately do win a lot of the times. And the even larger bummer is like, well, Natalie Ryan was getting, you know, legal work for free. So it's like, yeah, that's kind of like the, it's like, well, you know, but you know, it is like disc golf is just not the ones to that we're ever going to be able to like afford the expenses. So yeah, I guess we're back to where we were. It sure was a whole lot of hubbub to get back to where we were.
Yeah. Well, the so this was not met very well on social media. Well, so the side that,
which like I sympathize with them too, because like they ran out of money.
Yeah.
You know, they have to, at the end of the day, we need a place to play. So, like, people saying, people coming after them being like, oh, shit. They didn't want to give up. They didn't have to even take this as far as they did. Like, they spent a lot of money.
Yeah. So, obviously, the side that is backing and supporting Natalie Ryan, obviously, this was met with open arms. Makes perfect sense because Natalie Ryan back on the Pro Tour in 2023 and not in 2024, not just Natalie Ryan, but all transgender women are, well, not all, because there are still the two, what you want to call them, stipulations or rules that have to be met, but all that were previously on the Pro Tour.
Well, that have to be met but aren't evaluated.
Correct. As yeah. Are back on the Pro Tour. So obviously met and received well that side, but then the side who has been vocal against it, this was not met well. And like Trevor had said, I think it would be one thing if the PDGA just flip-flopped and basically just didn't give any reason or anything like that. But yeah, it's very obvious that like the PDGA and the Pro Tour even literally said like, this isn't the decision we want to have made, but we understand. So like, it's kind of almost a weird thing because Natalie Ryan is welcome back to the Pro Tour by rule, but not welcome back to the Pro Tour by like actually welcomed back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no,
like
it
the
is.
People running the Pro Tour are still being vocal of like, hey, this isn't what we want, but we're gonna have to do it, so we're just gonna put a smile on our face and do it anyways.
It is super weird.
It's a lose-lose in that scenario, like in that yeah. sense. But what the PDGA is now getting bombarded with is people, you know, threatening of they're taking their PDGA memberships away and all this stuff, and it's like, that's a tough one for me because I understand people being, and Natalie Ryan even in her Instagram post said like, I have no problem people standing up. Like I am, I forget how she worded it, but basically proud of people standing up for what they believe in because that's what she's doing as well. The problem she had was more the wording that was being used. That's how she worded it. You can read the whole Instagram post on her Instagram. But the PDGA was standing up for what they believe in, but they just couldn't. And the Pro Tour as well, but they couldn't financially afford yeah. to do so anymore.
Well, they can't just bankrupt
and
themselves.
So then, like, you have the people who also believed in that are now not being understanding at all. Is like, so if you're one of those people, if you're listening to this and you're like ticked off at the PDGA, ticked off at the Pro Tour for reversing this decision, take a step back, put yourself in their shoes. Like, what were they supposed to do? Like run everything into the ground and be left with nothing at all? Chasing after this, like, yeah, I understand standing up for what's right and standing up for what you believe in, but at the same time, like, There's
sometimes you gotta lose the battle to win the war, or just like you gotta save a battle for another.
Because it seems almost like the wording they're using is basically like, hey, this fight should be fought, and the PDGA and the Pro Tour have made it clear where they stand, where they believe in this fight. But they're basically saying we're not the ones that should fight this, which makes sense.
Right.
The disc golf, we're a growing sport. We, you know, obviously things have really taken off since 2020, since COVID, but like there's still a long ways to go to be able to like if this was the PGA Tour or this was the NBA or like the big five sports, like those sports could just endlessly chase what they believe to be right with like as much money as they want, because they're dealing with billions with a B, whereas this sport's dealing with millions with an M. And at the end of the day, the well just ran up for the Pro Tour and the PDGA. So if you're one of the people that's upset with that, just like have some understanding of like this isn't what they were wanting to do necessarily. They were forced into this decision, and it doesn't mean that the battle's quote unquote over for the PDGA and the Pro Tour. It just means that they're not the ones that are going to do it anymore. And then if you're on the flip side of that coin and you're excited with this, you should be, because the rules have changed, and now Natalie Ryan will be back in 2024 on the FPO Tour as the most prominent figure that from all of this. But
I think most people just read the headline, because obviously it was just tweeted like PDGA reverses.
Yes.
Nobody read the article, because like once you read it, it was like, ah.
Yeah.
But man, I'll tell you what, one thing is I am just terrified for the comment sections this year.
Yes.
Oh,
it'll
my
be
gosh.
Because if you remember, this is kind of why the DGN pulled their live comments.
And didn't they just announce they're bringing it back?
I don't think so.
I don't think they did. Yeah, I was saying like it's gonna be
Yeah. So it'll be an interesting 2024 and 2025 to say the least.
Up for the chat moderators on the YouTube live streams.
But there you have it. That's the update. You can read the full article on UltraWorld. You can also head over to Natalie Ryan's Instagram post and read her statement on it. You can head to the PDGA to read their official statement, and the Pro Tour's put out an official statement. So if you read all of that, then you'll be caught up to speed on kind of where everyone's at within that. But that's the update heading into 2024. The other announcement that came out of the Pro Tour camp this weekend is they've announced All-Star Weekend details on December 20th. So the Pro Tour is pleased to announce an updated location and adjusted format for the All-Star Weekend. It will now take place at the Olympus Disc Golf Course, which they just leaked the name of Paul's new course in Florida, formerly known as Grand Canyon. This is the same venue that will host the 2024 regular season opener, the Chess.com Invitational, the following weekend. How do you feel about the All-Star event happening and then at this course, and then a week later a Pro Tour event happening at the exact same course?
I don't love it, but I'm also so indifferent to the All-Star Weekend that I don't know, like it just doesn't really, I'm kind of like, yeah, that's kind of weird. But like I can't get myself too fired up about the All-Star Weekend and anything regarding it, because I don't really think that anybody cares that much about it until they put out a product that I'm like, oh, that was really fresh and interesting to watch. Like, I'm not going to get too wrought up about it, because like, I don't really care where it happens. If I had my choice, like I probably would not place it at the same place, especially because I think it's more so because it's a new course. I think that's why it like is worse. I think if the first event of the year were at Maple Hill and the All-Star event were at Maple Hill, I don't think anybody would really care that much. It's like we've already seen the course a million times anyways. It's the fact that it's happening on a new course, so it's weird that like the first reveal of the course is going to be during an All-Star Weekend. That I think is what makes it a little bit weird. But yeah, I mean, can't get too fired about the All-Star Weekend.
Oh yeah, well I disagree on I think that it's just, you have the All-Star, the big chunk of All-Star Weekend is just disc golf being played on this course. Mm-hmm. I think that it's just, I don't think it's hard to wrap our heads around that it's a bad idea to just have two events that we're trying to showcase disc golf at the same course and back-to-back weekends. Because then it's just like, it's just boring. You have, this course this weekend. Those who watch the All-Star Weekend, sick, here are these pros playing this course, these holes. And then 5 days later, the start of the Pro Tour season, here's these pros playing this course on these holes. Like, that's just, it's like, I have no problem with it being in Florida. I think that makes sense. Just do it anywhere else, any other course. Like, it doesn't have to be a super prestigious course, realistically, for the All-Star Weekend, because it's an exhibition event. So, like,
yeah, it is weird. I mean,
I just don't like the fact
last year they rented out like they used a golf course venue, so I'm sure it was, this is probably a budget cut thing. I'm going to be really interested to see how many things happen this year from both the PDGA and the Pro Tour that just reveal more and more the amount of money that got washed out of them in legal fees last year. Like, because like they're like, well, last year we rented a golf course for, they're probably thinking, well, that's a pretty easy thing to cut out of the budget that we don't have to spend on, and that'll save us a little bit of money. Like, that's, we're probably going to see that theme this year because they're just going to have to.
Yeah. So team captains will draft a team of players from the all-star roster to face off in both singles and double stroke play competitions. At the end of the weekend, the team with the most points is declared the winner. So that's the all-star game, if you will. So it's just singles and doubles stroke play. That's it. Then the skills challenge.
They should play Ripped Revenge.
They should. The skills challenge will return in a new capacity. Instead of counting the skills challenge results towards the overall team point, the putting distance and accuracy will be hosted as separate events, with a small number of additional touring pros invited to participate alongside the All-Stars. So this slightly expanded field will compete for individual prizes in each category before all eyes turn to doubles on Saturday and singles on Sunday. So essentially, they just kind of shifted a little bit, so you'll be able to see more pros do distance and like kind of like the, you know, dunk contest, 3-point shooting contest, yeah, stuff like that. So that's kind of the plan for the All-Star Weekend this upcoming year, and that'll be what kicks off the Pro Tour season, February 16th through the 18th.
It's like, I think playing singles, I think, is where it gets weird, because like you think about the NBA All-Star Game or like any All-Star Game, what's the one thing that could possibly make those things exciting? It's like, we're going to do more dunks and trick plays and things like that. Like, so like doubles is kind of like that, because like you maybe give an opportunity for players to do more crazy things in doubles, but like they're not really going to do that in singles. Like, some guys might lean into it, but like, yeah, I think it's just,
well, especially weird when you're playing singles on a Pro Tour course that you're going to play next weekend.
Yeah, like
weekend.
They're trying to practice.
Like, this is a good practice round. Yeah. It's like, oh, I have a little competition practice on the exact same course I'm going to see next weekend.
It's I don't know.
Doubles make sense, because like you have more fun with it. Collegiate doubles, I think, could be an interesting format for it. Because the All-Star Weekend is about like exhibiting stuff you don't normally get to see.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
I just don't know. I'm kind of got to the point where I don't know that All-Star Weekend needs to exist.
But no, yeah.
I don't see I think it's like a weird half start to the season. I think it'd just be better off if the first thing we got was the first Pro Tour event. Everybody are super pumped for it. We don't have this weird like in between, like, well, there's disc golf on, but the Super Bowl's tonight.
Is the Super Bowl on the same night again?
I don't know. I think we looked at it. When's the All-Star Weekend? I think the Super Bowl.
2024 Super Bowl is on the 11th. It's the next weekend.
Okay.
So it's the weekend after the Super Bowl.
They got that right.
They got that right this year.
Wait, it's the weekend after the Super Bowl?
Yeah. Super Bowl is Sunday, February 11th. This is the 16th through the 18th.
There we go. But yeah, I just don't know that it needs to exist. Like, I get, like, I just don't know, what are they trying to accomplish? Like, they started it, and I guess the idea is like, we're going to reward these players, give them this fun. And like, they still got, I guess, to get to compete for some prizes. So like, there's that reward, and like, you get to call yourself an all-star, but like, nobody's walking around calling themselves. I mean, I'll be darned if I've ever heard anybody say, oh man, yeah, Gannon Burry's a 3-time all-star. Maybe we need to start.
I was going to say, that's the only way this stuff like this happens is like, if the commentary who like will lean into 5-time world champ, whatever, if you started calling someone 3-time all-star. But it doesn't make sense in our sport.
Yeah, in golf in general, like, you're known by your titles, player of the year and rookie of the year. Like, you could sneak those in there for sure. But like, ultimately, it's going to be how many majors have you won.
Well, that's what I think. In an individual sport, the individual player is directly in control of how many titles they win. In a team sport, you can be a really good individual player, and if you just get shafted by your team, you might have no control.
The All-Star kind of
so the All-Star makes
them.
Sense, because it's like, hey, you weren't quite good enough to be the MVP, which is the individual award, but you're one of the top 12 players on either the East or the West, or how, you know, for baseball it's different, for football, Pro Bowl it's different, to where like, we can highlight some individual players that they aren't going to win the Super Bowl. They aren't going to win the NBA championship. Yeah. Maybe they might, but at least you have a chance. So like, you can be known as a 12-time All-Star who you never won an NBA championship or MVP. Right. It's like that. But if you're a 10-time All-Star in disc golf and you don't have any other accolades to your name, that's a problem. You're a 10-time All-Star in disc golf, so for 10 years, you were good enough to be one of the top 12 players, but you didn't win a single Pro Tour major or Tour Championship title.
This is where they just need to go ahead and turn the All-Star event into the Manufacturer's Cup. It's time.
I bet
people would watch that.
People would.
Yeah.
People would watch that.
People would watch that. You'd have all the... then you'd really give a hard deadline for all the manufacturers to announce their new signings, and you'd be like, oh man, Simon on MVP this year. Team MVP just got so good.
That's the other thing is like it kind of – like let's say Eagle McMahon – I don't remember if Eagle's in the All-Star event, but let's just – for this sake of my next sentence, Eagle's in the All-Star event. Eagle McMahon signs with MVP, and like the display of his first – throws with his new sponsor, new bag, is like at the All-Star event.
Yeah.
When like he doesn't really care what happens.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's tough. All-Stars. But hey, All-Star Weekend's happening in 2024, and it's happening in the same place. So if you want to get like a little preview of what exactly is going to happen the next weekend, there you go. You just watch the All-Star Weekend. Final thing to talk about to wrap up the show here, the Ultra World Fandom Survey released their how fans feel about media and commentators, how they consume the sport. So first off, they have the amount of times there were appearances for major, playoff, elite, and silver events for commentary teams. Ian Anderson, I believe, appeared the most with 10 total appearances, other than Zoe Ann Dyke for FPO. She appeared at, I think, all of them with 16. Nate Doss was at 9. Philo Brathwaite was at 9. Terry Miller was at 9. So that was just their appearances. And then the average fandom score. So biggest raw commentator and what is number 5? What does that mean? Commentator average fandom score removes all scores of 5 from each commentator's average. Oh, so I guess if they just say they're average, it removes that from them. Interesting. Okay, anyway, so the average fandom score for Nate Sexton was 8.95. Brian Earhart came in second at 8.07. Jeremy Colling at 7.5. Madison Walker, 7.1.
It's interesting how all the top people are color, it looks like.
Yes. Brian Earhart does play-by-play and color. The best solo play-by-play guy via the fans is Terry Miller at 7.19. Charlie Eisenhood's right below it at 6.58. Raw average. Philo Brathwaite, Nate Perkins, they're all Ian Anderson and Grant Zellner are the two lowest play-by-play guys. Ian at 6.13, Grant at 5.38, which I thought Grant did an okay job.
I thought he did it as well.
Nate Doss was the overall just lowest, 4.99.
That's lame. You guys are lame, dude.
Yeah, it's tough.
I love Nate Doss. He gets a little excited, but you know what?
I like Doss.
Honestly, I'm glad this year reflects more what I thought. Like, because I remember last year looking at the survey and be like, huh? But like this year it makes more sense. Like I think that Terry is the best. And when you have like Terry, Brian Earhart, Sexton, like Nate Perkins, that's a good crew. And I don't like Philo and Ian. I think they're not good. And the survey kind of agrees.
Yeah, so Nate Doss, it seems, is basically just kind of even across the board. If you look at the chart, like he is kind of like not like he's pretty even. Grant Zellner, he just has a ton of people with a 5.
Did we answer this part of the survey? I don't remember it.
I think so.
I guess so.
They also have the number of survey participants that started following disc golf per year. And so very heavy 2020 with 680 of the survey participants. 2021 was 430. 2019, interesting, was 396. So, like, 2019, 20, 2021, and then you had 265 in 2023, or in 2022 being the next biggest, and then people who just started this year was only 50.
Good stuff, man. Young sport. Grow it.
Let's see where my year stands here.
Where's your year?
12, 13, 14, 15. 104 of us, 2015, mine represent.
Would be 2013.
2013, Trevor? Let's see where Trevor's at. 48 of you.
Let's go. Rise
now,
up.
Do you prefer to watch live or post-produced? 38% of people said live that answered the survey, which was a 7% increase over 2022.
Hey, nice.
17% said it depends on the event, which was a 7% decrease over 2022. And 21% said post-produced, which was a 2% decrease. 11% said it depends on which event and which round, but I lean towards post-produced, which was a 12% decrease. So increase in amount of people watching live, decrease in amount of people watching post-produced. And then 52% of people said they subscribe to DGN all year round. 14% said they subscribe part of the year on a month-to-month basis. Mm. 22% said they watch the free coverage and post it on YouTube. And 10% said they don't watch DGN at all. Then this was another interesting part. What do you think of the Pro Tour on a scale to 1 to 10 and the PDGA on a scale to 1 to 10? So the 2023, you have...
this is like the... What do they call the presidential... like your... Gosh, the rate, the percentage of like your approval percentage.
Yeah.
This is your... This is the approval rates.
I wish you could see...
the Pro Tour and the PDGA.
So this just has like how many people voted by number. So it doesn't give them a like...
Why does scale. It not do that?
I don't know. Probably because they don't want to show that.
Well, we can do the math ourselves.
So the PDGA or the Pro Tour for 2023, 23% of people gave the Pro Tour a 10, whereas only 14% gave them a 10 last year. But the biggest one for the PDGA or for the Pro Tour was 27% of people gave the DGPT, wow, an 8, which is like spot on the same as last year. The PDGA actually shows a slight increase in most of the categories this year over last year, especially the higher categories, but their heaviest one was a 7, which was a 2% decrease from last year. So 7 for the PDGA, 8 for the DGPT was the most voted answer. And then how closely do you follow MPO? Was basically 30% of people said 10. How closely do you follow FPO? 18% of people said 8. And I believe that's all the information there. So, the Ultra World Phantom Survey. You know, there's that other update.
It's basically the Phantom Survey. Every year is me being like, oh, wow, interesting, cool. And then being like, I don't do the information.
Yeah, there's not really much information. It's just fun to know.
I feel like this year it's really just confirming what I suspect.
Well, that's because it was basically the Foundation Survey this year. Next year is going to really confirm what you suspect.
Next year
is going to
be the Foundation Survey V2 when we really flood it.
All right, let's wrap it out with the Silas Selects for this week. Okay. So if you haven't watched the show in recent weeks, basically we've been having Silas just put a random mold into this box, and we guess what mold is in the box.
Yeah.
With the hope of just getting one right.
Okay.
That's it. Trevor, what's your guess this week?
Oh my gosh, dude, this is difficult, man. I'm going to say... Sometimes the strategy with this could be you just say the same one every time.
That's true.
I'm not going to do that, though. I'm going to be a bounce around guy. I'm going to say...
Silas is watching us.
This is going to be a Prodigy A3.
A3 from Prodigy. I'm going to go the Firebird.
Okay.
Oh, that's a loss. I don't know why we both reacted like we were really close.
Did I guess that at some point? No, I don't know. I just feel like that was a gettable
one. Feeling mid.
It's going to feel like that every
week. That was a gettable one, though. Like, last week was the Bullet. That's a harder one. The Wasp, I mean.
Right. It hit in plain sight, though.
Dang. That's tough.
Silas is a master at this, yeah, man. We're never going
to
guess
it. We haven't got it yet. You want to pick up a Wasp, you can head over to foundationdisc.com. Other than that, we'll be back here same time, same place next week. Another Tuesday show to kick off the new year. You're going to want to tune in for a little grip lock announcement. Yeah. Big time. So we'll see you then.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.